Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's hard to keep the energy up coming off a loss, but it's all right. We're gonna power our way through it. Welcome to another episode of the Saddle Up Show. I am Rashad McGinnis. That is my co-host, Destin Adams. Destin, you know we hate doing these shows coming off of losses, but somehow we gotta manage to get through it, man. So how you doing? How you coping right now?
I'm doing good. I mean, if you would have told me last week that we lost by 1 point, I probably wasn't gonna be all that upset. I think it's just how you lose that changes everything. When you got the full story in front of you, it just changes the way you look at it. That was a winnable game, and we've talked about it. The Colts are almost to that point where it's like, man, the season's over, and every loss just digs you a little deeper. I don't want to say the season's 6 feet under yet. But we're a good 4 feet down if I had to make an estimate.
Yeah, this season is, I mean, it's looking pretty rough. It's if you're on a the winning bandwagon. I know a lot of the fan base is kind of torn between what they want, you know, whether they want to lose and get a good draft pick or win and somehow try to stay alive in the playoff race. I mean, technically the Colts haven't been eliminated yet, but unless they go on and win the next, what, four out of five, pretty much.
Gotta win nine.
Yeah. So you would need to win five out of six.
In my opinion, I guess that's completely hypothetical. I don't see an 8-8-1 team even being the seven, personally.
No. And, you know, division's pretty much gone at this point, with Tennessee winning on the previous Thursday against a Green Bay team that's probably more disappointing than the Colts, to be honest. As rough as that seem, and not a lot of teams is probably eligible for that, along with Denver, of course, and maybe the Raiders, who the two teams the Colts beat this year.
You know
The
how
Colts.
rude the Packers were to their fans this last week, though?
How rude were they?
You go and beat Dallas while your fan base already just has this like little to no faith. You go and beat Dallas and you like resurge the faith in Green Bay just to go lose to a Tennessee team that, I mean, we can say whatever we want about them. Do I think they're the most talented team? No. Do I think they're actual contenders? No. But that is a very good coach team. That is a very well coached team that he gets the best out of them. Coach Mike Vrabel, you got to give that guy his flowers at some point. And the Packers, in all sense, I mean, to me, they were the more talented team there. They had opportunities to win that game. And plays they normally make, plays in years past that they normally make, are just not being made. And that. You can talk about a lot of those reasons. The ex MVP is a big one, but that's probably the reason that they're more disappointed than the Colts this year, though.
Yeah, they actually stole the page out of the Colts book. The Colts beat Kansas City, and the next week they dropped the home game to Tennessee Titans in disappointing fashion. So, you know, Tennessee always seems to catch these teams coming off of big wins and handle their business. Shout out to Tennessee. I never thought I would say that, but one thing me and you have said, whether it was on this show or shows in the past that we were on, you know. They find a way to win, man. They're not the most talented team. And we look at the schedule and we see brutal stretches that they go through, but they keep their head above water at all times, man. That's a testament to their coaching, Mike Vrabel and the rest of that coaching staff that gets the most out of his guys, man. It has those guys up and ready to play every week. And I think I'm gonna gag from talking good about Tennessee within
Yeah,
the
say move
first
on. I'd
five minutes.
rather talk about the loss to Philly now.
Okay, so let's talk about the game. We could pretty much just skim through it a little bit. The Colts started off, you know, scored on the first drive of the game. The game was looking really, really encouraging. I actually tweeted that this was the first time the Colts offensive line dominated like a drive, because that first drive, Jonathan Taylor was getting what he wanted. They had the one long completion on the crosser, Pittman, I believe that was on the first drive of that game, and they just ran the ball down Philly throat, man. And I was actually thinking at that time that the Colts had a chance. What was your initial thoughts early on in the game about the vibe, not just the first drive, but just pretty much the first quarter, first half?
Yeah, I mean, it just felt like a simple game plan was working. They were able to do things that I think the team was built to do early in the season, and just hadn't been able to perform to that level to be able to play that way. Like you said, Jonathan Taylor was getting what he wanted, and that was great to see early on. And then you had the situation where Philadelphia had allowed a lot of rushing success to other teams coming into this one, so they went out to the streets and added two known to be interior line stoppers in Ndamukong Suh and
Linval Joseph.
Lavelle Joseph.
Yeah.
And I think that first drive, you could see some rust in those two that who hadn't been on a roster all year, struggling to kind of figure out the best approach to get through Quentin Nelson, Ryan Kelly. Will Fries looked really good in the run game on Sunday. I know he got a lot of heat for his pass game, but in the run game, I think he held up really well. So I do want to give that to him because he'll get a lot of flack later for the pass blocking play out of the left tackle and right guard the rest of the night. But solid run blocking there on that first drive. Now, after that, I think there are some things to talk about with Press Taylor maybe trying to get a little cute. That second drive after Taylor just ate Philadelphia's interior line like it's his lunch. They went to a possession with 0 runs,
Three straight passes, yep.
three straight plays of passing, and you have a three and out after a touchdown drive. That takes a lot of the air out of all the momentum you just built. So that was hard. That was tough to watch. I mean, everything after that first touchdown, we were winning. The defense, great. I mean, is there enough things we can say about this defense, Rashad?
Nah, man, this defense is they're playing on another level, man.
Without pass rush.
Right. And to play that run game, Philadelphia, who has a very talented offensive line and a great run game, a good run scheme. The coach just wasn't having it, man. Like, they just wasn't having it. The linebackers was flowing. The defensive tackles was getting penetration. They just played well, man. Yannick was surprisingly good in run support. That definitely hasn't been a strong point for him this season, but he played well. They just had him just crash, literally crashing down. He's coming down the line screaming on all those RPOs that the Eagles was running. They didn't make him think. They was literally ignoring Jalen Hurts and letting the linebacker that was spying just flow to wherever he was going. So if he kept it, that's the responsibility it was. The defensive end, who normally has to wait and read it out, nope. I'm just coming down the line. I'm just taking Miles Sanders. I'm gonna crush Miles Sanders every time on these RPOs. And it worked to perfection, man. It worked to perfection. Like I said, the lead was 10-3 at the half. The Colts didn't get anything going on offense outside of that first drive, but the Eagles struggled immensely. They couldn't get anything going. And when they did get something going, they were shooting themselves in the foot with a bunch of penalties. This was a very sloppy game on both sides. The Colts was affected more in the second half, but in the first half, the Eagles were shooting themselves in the foot. And then the game goes to halftime. And at halftime, I'm thinking, okay, the Colts are playing well defensively. This is not the first time we've been here. We've seen this movie a lot. The offense has to get something going. With the Eagles getting the ball fresh out of halftime, I'm terrified that they're going to go down and score and tie the game up. But then on the first drive, man, they run a play action, looking downfield, trying to go deep. And Yannick with the strip sack. And I just was like, holy shit, they're really trying to win this game. Big Grover, I believe, recovered the fumble. And then the Colts offense stalled out. And I'm like, damn it. That was a golden opportunity to make something happen. But they had settled for a field goal and they went up 13-3. And a part of me was like, this is not enough. What was you thinking at that time when that happened?
When you have to take field goals as often as this offense has to, and as often as they had to on Sunday, and you're playing a high-powered offense, I'm never going to feel comfortable. You have to reward the defense with that kind of play. You have to get into the end zone, and they just couldn't do it. After that first drive, we did not see them get back into the end zone. We saw the touchdown, and then you add three field goals on top of that, and one missed one from Chase. I saw a lot. There's a lot of blame going on. I mean, that's one of the things that I guess I will say I'm shocked. I mean, we've been around the block a few now. We know how the fan base is. We know how football is. We know how sports is. If there's a loss, you have to have someone to blame. It can't just be a team loss. It has to be a person. I've sh shockingly, after an entire year of straight Jeff Sa of Frank Reich slander, Jeff Saturday is not catching any flack for a loss.
Must be nice, man.
Head
Must
coaches
be
around
nice.
head coaches around the league must be like, how do I get that job?
Right. That's no
How?
pressure, man.
Because, and I get it. I think Jeff Saturday has said a lot of the right things. I think he's approached this situation as well as anyone could have. So, like, my hat's off to the guy. Don't get me wrong. But it is funny to go from every game is the head coach's fault to just not a soul speaking on it. That's a takeaway.
And man, when you look at it, like when you strip the emotion and the excitement that they played with last week of Frank getting fired and Jeff replacing him and all happened in the media and the craziness, you know, when that emotional high run out and you get back to just football and X's and O's, this team had the exact same issue that they had when Frank Reich was the coach. It was no different. They
The
didn't look different.
only difference is I think the defense is playing at such a high level right now, and I think they've gotten a grasp on Bradley's defense to a level where the past 2 weeks we've had a lead at the half, first two leads
Right.
of the year. So I
Yeah.
mean that there's not a perfect way to say that, but 2 straight weeks you had 0 leads on the year before that at the half. You have 2 now. That's something to build on. Congrats. I also think it's impossible for Jeff Saturday to come in and just improve this thing overnight. So I think that would have been unrealistic. So I guess I'm happy in a sense that our fans aren't blaming him. It's just funny to me that it went from head coach being the fault every week to now he doesn't catch a thing. But let's just go down our list of culprits that we've heard. Matt Ryan.
It's not Matt Ryan now. He's public enemy number one. I said
Does
that right after the game.
Matt Ryan deserve blame? Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. But is he the main reason? I don't think so. But
There's no
let's
way.
keep going down the list here. Matt Ryan, first one.
Oh.
I did hear some Park Frazier, so we
I
did have
did.
some play calling issues.
I did see Parks.
It was his second game ever as a play caller. Do I think he got a little cute t at times? Yes, I think he did. I think that's an issue a lot of people around the league get caught into sometimes in the momentum of the game. So I'm not gonna put a nail in the guy's play calling coffin in the NFL because he had some situational things that he did wrong in his second attempt ever. Just not gonna do it. Maybe call me crazy.
I've seen some Ballard.
Chris Ballard, now that Frank's gone, even national media coverage has just, it's all like Ballard has to answer to this. Ballard, and that's the point. When you fire your head coach in the middle of the year, Jim Irsay can say whatever he wants. Jim Irsay can
Yeah.
like whatever he wants. He can adopt Chris Ballard as his God-given son. When you fire your head coach in the middle of the year, to me, this is similar to when you fired Marcus Brady the week before. This is all right. It can't be Frank Reich's fault anymore. Who
Right, that's
whose fault is
exactly
it
it.
next?
You're absolved from blame. Like it's on you now. Which Ballard, I think has escaped for a while. You know, because so there are some likable things about Ballard, and typically the people that like Ballard, myself included, you know, you go to the talent evaluation side of Ballard to kind of justify his tenure. You know, but nobody ever addresses the failures of this roster. You know, this is his vision. You know, when you get a general manager job, a GM job, you typically have a 4 or 5 year vision of what you think this roster is like. The first year, you have a massive overhaul from the last regime, and you start that process, and you start to draft the guys, and then you know those guys work themselves up and earn their second contracts with the team, and you bring in outside guys that you like with the culture. This is Ballard's vision. And I think we have a question about this kind of stuff later. So I digress to keep going. We
The
can
last thing
talk
I'll
about
say on Ballard is just shout out to Joel Erickson of the Indy Star, because he had a post this week that just, if Chris Ballard read it, I bet he would have cried himself to sleep. Joel Erickson said, "The team that Chris Ballard wants to build so badly, starting in the trenches, solid quarterback play, great running game, all, a good defense, and
team he just played against.
then average to above average weapons that you utilize their strengths to make them appear better, but you don't have to have the elites of the elites of the positions." And he said, "The Eagles have done that twice in 6 years, and the Chris Ballard has not done it once."
Damn.
If I'm
Pain, man.
Chris Ballard, I'm crying. I'm
Q.
crying myself to sleep. My wife is holding me while I'm rocking back and forth. Like, honey, Joel Erickson from the Indy
Wow,
Star hurt
man.
my feelings. Like that, like the A plus tweet from Joel there. Like that was just
Damn it, Joe. Damn it,
solid
Joe.
stuff.
That was awesome, man. That's a perfect embodiment of the Chris Ballard era, you know. And we'll get to that later. Just some overall thoughts on the game. The Colts lost, man. They lost. They had this game won. They depended on the defense. Of course, we know the motto of the defense, bend but don't break. But eventually, those guys were tired. From the moment the Colts took that field goal and went up six, I knew that this game was over. It wasn't a doubt in my mind. I know people are mad at Zaire Franklin about the pass interference. But one play we got to touch on before, you know, we leave this game. And no, for you guys, it's not the 4th and 21 check down Matt Ryan threw because he's running for his life. And Deion Jackson deciding to run out of bounds and save time on the clock on 4th down. It's not that. As ridiculous as that sounded, just now saying. It was the 3rd and 7 Jalen Hurts quarterback sneak. The Red Sea parted. I don't know what kind of metaphor you want to use for the way it just opened up in the middle of the field. But did you hear the reasoning behind it? You know, with the look that they gave.
I saw Buckner's take on it, explaining that they sold out on the pass. They felt pretty confident, which on 3rd and 7 in that situation against most quarterbacks in the NFL, I get that. And I think it's a easier said than done approach in the sense that stopping this style of offense, stopping this style of quarterback in the red zone, in the goal line, is difficult.
It is.
You have to keep every single weapon in front of you, because you want the back of the end zone. You want that as your friend. You want that. You want him to throw it that way. So, in a sense, you're actually playing in front of them to this instant. You don't want them to make a catch in front of the end zone. You want him to have to throw it out.
Yeah, you wanted to have to throw it over the second level's head.
Yes, which is what you're
Yeah.
wanting to do. So, I get that. Now, the problem is when you sold out like you did. My assumption on the play and how you watch it, I think in the middle there, Zaire is probably supposed to be on a QB spy slash coverage, to where if there's a broken coverage, he takes it. I think he left early. Like, don't get me wrong. Now, Zaire's strength's never going to be pass coverage, and anyone that ever wants that to be it, like, you're just wanting him to fail a little bit, because the guy has had a very good season when he's asked to do what he's supposed to do. Coverage is not his strong suit. It's just not going to be where he makes his money. And so in that play, starts out immediately. You see that direct slant, and I think Zaire panics a little bit, thinking that's going to be the easy touchdown. Collapses out, giving up the middle. So I get it from watching it. It looked awful. Don't get me wrong, because it looked as easy as it could be.
It looked
But
ridiculous.
I think in the end, it was just choosing one evil over the other. And to me, going forward, make him throw it. I would rather him have to throw the slant than just letting him walk into the end zone like that going forward. But I understand in that situation, as a linebacker who's not normally asked to play coverage, is being forced to do that, I can see why he made that choice.
Yeah, man. It's you know, that play that was tough on on Zaire. Like I said, the pass interference before that, which I blame him a little bit, but
He
I
had to
gotta
think the ball
blame.
was there, right?
They had to. And the pass rush just allowing Jalen Hurts to just sit and even get that ball off to even be in that position was ridiculous. It felt like he bounced around for 7, 8 seconds. Anytime you let your running back get 40, 50 yards down the field, it's a bad spot to put Zaire in. It's a lot to ask of him to have to do in that situation. So, man, it was a tough loss, man. It was a tough loss. I know the reps missed the face mask on Ryan on that third down, the one that Indy took the field goal on and went up six. But you shouldn't be relying on reps to get you out of these type of situations, man. It's inexcusable. Indy had several chances to put that game away,
If you
and
score
it just
20
didn't get
points, you
it done.
win.
Right. I mean,
If you score 20 points, you win. If your offense cannot get you 20 points, I don't care what other situations happened. I don't care if you got called for 40 penalties in the game. If your offense can't score you 20 points in the National Football League, they did not do enough to win the game. Like that's as simple as it gets.
20 points seem like it's been a magical number for us this year. How
20
many times
points
did we
would be
score?
average.
How many times we scored over 20 twice this year?
Jacksonville.
I know the Jags game for sure. And Raiders, right? That's it. That
Last
might
week.
be it. That might be it. Low key. Times we scored over 20.
We scored 25 against the Raiders.
Yeah.
We don't got to talk about New England. We scored 16 against the Commanders, loss. We scored 10 against the Titans, loss. 34 against the Jags, two times. We scored 12 against the Broncos, 17 against the Titans, 20 against the Chiefs. That's a win.
Well, over 20
Zero.
is what we come.
And then week one was a tie at
It's
20.
20, yeah.
But
We scored over
technically,
20.
every time you scored 20 on the dot, you didn't lose this year.
That's ridiculous, man. It's ridiculous. Okay, well, let's get to our first question. Well, appreciate you guys. I want to thank you guys again for sending in questions, man. We love to get them answered. First question is from Journeyman J. His ad name is at JV3. Shout out to J. I rock with J, very active member in the Colts community. What you giving J ad name?
I love that it's JAYVEE 3, no numbers spelled
No
out.
numbers at all. That's dope.
I say I low key like it. I'm gonna go 7.5.
I'm going seven.
I'm going
I'm going
seven and a
seven.
half. I like that it doesn't have the number. I like the JV3, and then I like that he spelled out J and V. I don't know why I like it so much.
It looks
Like,
good
I
aesthetically, though.
do.
Like, just
Yeah, I
looking
do. I
at
like
it,
it.
yeah, it is. I like it. I rock with it. His question is, who could have predicted? I'm not surprised he sent the Paris Campbell question. He said, who could have predicted Paris Campbell being wide receiver one? Question mark. How big of a blockbuster deal do the Colts re-sign Campbell to? I
I
know why he
believe.
did. Jay's been a Paris Campbell advocate for a while,
I would
so
say I
I
believe
get.
he predicted it probably.
Yeah,
If I had to guess,
it's a
who would have?
victory lap. It's his form of a victory lap. I'm not mad at it.
I mean, hey, Paris, it was all we always knew it was about health. The talent was there. It was just, can he stay healthy long enough to be able to show that talent? He's done it this year, knock on wood. I want that guy to be on the field because he makes big plays. I think in that last drive, he was making plays to where you could have expected the Colts to score a touchdown if it wasn't this Colts offense. But
God, how big was that that he didn't score on that deep ball? He got tripped up. He tried to get in the end zone
he
too,
did.
man.
He
And if
did.
he would have gotten there, who knows? Maybe we're talking about a win right now, for sure. But
But then the specific question, how big of a blockbuster deal did the Colts re-sign Campbell to? My approach on the question, I went, the NFL is a copycat league. They like to look at what others have done, replicate it, maybe a little bit more, just depending on the situation. So, just last year, I went and found three receivers that I felt could be in a similar wheelhouse, or a similar at least situation, stat wise, going into their contract that our boy is going to be in.
Mm-hmm.
So those three, to me, Russell Gage was coming from Atlanta, went to Tampa Bay. I think Russell Gage had a little more production, but we'll talk about that. The other two that come to mind, Cedric Wilson, who was in Dallas, and Zay Jones, who went to Jacksonville from the Raiders, I believe. So
Absolutely.
contract wise, those three, we saw Russell Gage get 3 year 30 million. We saw Zay Jones get 3 year 24. We saw Cedric Wilson get 3 year 22. So
Yeah.
that's 70 year, a little over 70 year, 80 year, 10 a year. All three of those guys technically have a more productive season than Paris Campbell is going to end up with this year. I mean, we'll see. There's a lot of football left to be played, so I guess we can't project it all the way. But Russell Gage was coming off a 700-yard season, and I want to say seven touchdowns, but let's fact check that real
I
quick.
think it's definitely reasonable Paris Campbell gets to 700 yards. I don't know if the touchdowns will be there. I believe he has three this year.
Well, he only had four, so that's on me. Russell Gage it was at 770 and four touchdowns
Has he
before.
had any health injury history though? In his past, I can't remember because I don't remember him getting on the field much before.
So he was drafted in 2018.
Yeah, I remember that.
He played 15 games the first year, 16 the second, 16 the third, 14 last year, so missed three games
So he's
last
been
year.
pretty
And
healthy.
then this season's going on right now. So he's played in seven games this season.
Yeah, so he's been pretty healthy. Didn't start really producing up until last year. Similar to Paris, though. I mean, Paris produced, but he was hurt a lot. And he decided in his contract year to have his best season, which is what Russell Gage did. And he
Gage put
cashed.
two, and Gage on his defense put two back-to-back years up. He had 786 in 2020 and four touchdowns, and then 770 and four touchdowns in 2021.
So pretty much consistently and that's what I'm thinking about Paris. I'm thinking Paris gets maybe another a 1 year deal just to see if he can do it again, kind of like a prove it deal. It's not like.
I think you're right. Of the three, the one that looks very similar to me, Cedric Wilson, who was out of Dallas, really only had 1 year of production. He only played six games his rookie year in 2019, five catches for 46 yards. 2020, he played all 16 games, wasn't a starter, 189 yards, two touchdowns. And then
Like,
2021
must sound like a
had
practice. I
the
mean, not practice squad, a special team guy, bro.
And then 2021 had a much bigger role. We see Gallup went down with an injury. He got to step up a little bit. Had 45 catches, 602 yards, and six touchdowns.
Yeah,
So
he's pretty
one
much
year of
wide receiver
production.
three last year,
So that's
without
one
Gallup
year. That's 1 year of
behind
production.
Amari and CeeDee. Yeah. So that makes sense. He played well in spots last year. Similar to what, Paris is doing. Paris definitely flashes ability to be wide receiver one from time to time. I think what hurt Paris the most though was with the game where Pittman and Pierce was out. People expected him to step up and not to say he didn't do his part, but they just didn't get anything going offensively that game, and it kind of looked like, okay, all right, let's everybody temper expectations for what Paris can do. He's not quite ready for that step yet, but the role that they're using him in the slot, man, he's looking pretty good. He's looking pretty good.
So would you pay him 3 years, 22? That's a little over seven a year. Seven and some change a year.
3 years, 22. I probably would. It would be a gamble based off his injury history, but it's an absolute steal. I feel like if he's healthy and he continues to develop at the rate he's going, then I feel like it just, that's a robbery for what wide receivers are costing
Ballard would
these
pay him.
days.
Ballard would give him 3 year 22. Do you think a new GM gives him 3 year 22?
Absolutely not.
I don't know. I mean, a 1 year deal would probably be more in a new GM's wheelhouse, especially. I could
That
see
was what I'm
Ballard
thinking too.
giving Campbell a 3 year 22 deal, like straight up. I could definitely see it.
I could see a coach that have a vision offensively for how they want to use Paris going to the GM and asking him to lock this guy up, and maybe it working out that way, but it'll be difficult to get that kind of deal from somebody that really has no history with him, and just looking at his stat sheet and looking at the film and saying, well, I need to see more.
I agree, but we'll see. I know JV3 would give him a 4-year, $100 million contract and never look back, but we'll just see how it all goes down free agency wise. Up next here, we have a few guys that are going to be grading ads today, but we have Ty Bob at Ty Bob Official. I know he's a longtime commenter. I don't think he's ever asked a question before this
I don't
week.
think so either.
With the weak spots being the right guard, left tackle, and quarterback, where do you see the Colts going in the draft if Chris Ballard is here or not? At TY Bob Official, name Ty Bob.
I'm not mad at that. He even has a logo I see for his picture. Got the T with the red color T with the black B. Okay. I'm gonna give Ty Bob a six for sure. Six. Six is 6.5, maybe six. I'm gonna go six for
Yeah,
TBO.
I'm gonna go six. Official at the end. As you know, I'm more of a the Ty Bob type of guy, instead of Ty Bob Official. Maybe you want to think about adding the join the bandwagon on Twitter. And so his question, if you didn't hear last, was, and I'm gonna go six as well. With the weak spots being the right guard, left tackle, and quarterback, where do you think the Colts go in the draft if Chris Ballard is here or not?
I'm gonna operate under the pretense that he's not, because that's just more fun for me. You go quarterback. You go quarterback. If this team right now, they're currently selecting 14th. I expect this team to lose a couple of more games down the stretch. I believe they have games against Pittsburgh, Minnesota, Dallas, Chargers, and Houston, and the Giants. And the Giants as well. I expect this team to at least lose three of those games. So you might can squeeze into the top 10. You might can squeeze into the top 10, right beyond, right on the cusp of the 9-10 area. And I think you get your quarterback, man. If you really like a guy, you go up maybe four or five spots if you need to. You do what you got to do to get that guy. I know a couple people dropped a tear when Hendon Hooker tore his ACL Saturday. I might have cried a little bit, but I'll go quarterback. I know guard is not even an option for me right there at the top 10. I can tell you now, spoiler alert, I'm not taking a guard. Left tackle is interesting. It just depends on how big you are on Ryman still. We saw Ryman, speaking of Ryman, have his struggles this week. He's pretty good. Like I say, his issue is always going to be with power guys. Power guys, guys that decide to bull rush him straight in the chest, or speed to power guys. Because just the typical speed edge rushers, he does pretty well with them. He athletically, he's gifted. He moves his feet pretty well. So it's much different from when Matt Pryor was out there at tackle. Ryman, if you believe in him, then there's no need to take a tackle that high. But if you have your doubts on him, then I can see why you would consider tackle there. But me, I would just go with quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, if there is a quarterback in this class available at your selection that you have deemed can be a franchise guy, you believe with the right thing, you can get that out of him, that's who you take. No questions asked. That's what you have to do. So that's the first one. And then you have the other two, left tackle is the only option. Yeah, we cannot have two top 10 picks at guard on the roster. The rest of the league will literally just laugh at us. That'll just be who we are. So left tackle, there's some good tackles in this class. I like Ryman. I like his play. I like his abilities. But I also think there's a world where if you take a tackle and you just want to get the best five out there, there's a world where a new GM comes in and believes that Ryman, because of being a smaller armed tackle, would be a better guard. So there's a whole different situation where a new staff comes
Exactly.
in and they don't have this belief that long arms don't matter at tackle, because this regime does believe that. They've gotten Braden Smith to play tackle with shorter arms. We've seen them try other options as well. So with a new regime, we could see them wanting to move Ryman to guard, and that opens up the tackle spot even more. And then I would even add that edge rusher is a big need as well, that I would put over right guard as what they would look to in that first round.
Yeah, man, I think at this point all things are on the table, and this is actually a pretty good segue to our next question, because it's in a similar vein, and it's from a guy, B-Rod. His at name is at Coconut underscore Jones. I rock with that name, but there is an underscore there, and we must address it. So what are you giving the at name at Coconut underscore Jones?
I would have been rocking with Coconut Jones. I would have been rocking with Coconut Jones. Coconut Jones would have probably been in the 6.5, 7 range. So I'm gonna drop it down to a 5.5. I still like Coconut Jones. The underscore just doesn't do it for me personally.
Yeah, and shout out to Coconut Jones, man. Good dude. Interacted with him a few times on Twitter. His question is, if you were GM for the draft, do you take a top three left tackle prospect or a top 3 to 5 QB in the first round this year? And the reason I've still picked this question after our last question, because it is interesting where you're going to be picking at. You can assume pretty much the top two guys are off the board. So you're going to have, he's giving you a selection from 3 to 5, or taking a left tackle that's in the top three. It kind of changes things depending on how you look at it. But would you say you're early 3 to 5 as of right now is, I'm going to say, Levis, Hooker, and Ward?
You think Hooker's there with the ACL still?
Well, I was given that as if he was healthy. So
I mean,
I.
so I get that. I'm assuming that come draft time, the thing that's going to hurt Hooker is he's not going to be able to go through the combine. He's not going to have a pro day. And I think that's one of the things
Damn it,
where
we're gonna miss him at the senior bowl.
we are going
Damn
to
it, I
miss him at the
just
senior
realized
bowl.
that.
Hooker will not. He may be out there doing some media work, I guess, but he definitely will not be playing by then. So, to me, the 3 to 5, most likely because of that situation. I hate it for Hooker already, don't get me wrong. But being an older quarterback, not being able to be there,
Yeah.
he's most likely going to fall out of that top 5 range for me. So, the three names that would come to mind for me there are going to be Levis, Ward, Richardson.
Yeah,
Probably the
makes
three
sense.
there.
Makes sense.
I like those three guys. I think all three of those guys can be franchise quarterbacks at the next level. So for that reason, I'm going to go those. I'm going to go quarterback. I like this top tackle class. I like the top three tackles in this class, even particular. So that will hurt a little bit to be thinking about. I'm going to lean quarterback still because this team is just going to go nowhere until that gets answered. And if you
Yeah.
have the ability and the option comes to you to finally right that ship, or at least to attempt to, that's the biggest problem. You're not even attempted to right it.
Right.
So that one has to be where you go.
Yeah, I'm definitely always gonna go quarterback in that situation. Like I went with the previous question. Cameron Ward, man. I'm starting the Cameron Ward campaign. Destin's on the 2024 wave, and I rebuke him in the name of Jesus Christ.
I come draft time, let's be honest, I cannot imagine that I'll be in that wheelhouse. But I mean, a lot of things could change, but I will never
You
step
see
off the
Caleb
ledge.
Williams this Saturday? Oh
Let's not
my
talk
God.
about it. See, like
Oh my God.
you're trying to push me back.
Oh my
Like,
God.
get behind
Fight
me.
on.
Get behind me, Satan. Next question, so I don't have to think about Caleb Williams. At This is coming from Matt Maringer. We've rated his app before. Matt, longtime listener, longtime
My
question
boy.
giver. Appreciate it, Matt. Where do we go from here? Man, that's just a good question in itself. He has
I
more.
know. That's literally could have been the question, and there's plenty of directions we could have went in.
I know it is a broad question, but I don't know how else to put it. Our offense is so bad while our defense is doing the best to keep up in games. We know what needs to improve, so how do we manage it the rest of this year and into the offseason?
Where to begin though? Where to actually begin with this question? Because the offense is terrible, man. And I've done everything I've can. Destin asked me today. Me and Destin haven't talked since the game, since the game Sunday. And he texted me today. He literally asked, "What's your thought on the game? What's your thoughts on the game?" I was like, "The offense sucks. I don't know what else." You know, I know people point the blame at different people at different positions, specific people. The offense as a whole sucks. It is one of the bottom three offenses in the NFL. Nobody expected the offensive line to play this way, first of all. The offensive line is at the center of all of this, in my opinion. I think if the offensive line was even playing average, this would be an average offense. At least Marcus Brady would still have his job. Frank Reich would still have his job. Matt Ryan would have never been benched. It's several things that would be just totally different about the organization as a whole. I've probably never seen an offensive line kill an organization like this, probably in my NFL career since I've been watching the NFL. But it's so unique that the offensive line has crippled this team like that. I mean, Frank Reich has even been able to drag teams that was less talented on the offensive line to better offensive output and better scoring offenses than what this one is doing. And this one's supposed to have three pillars on it. You know, you got two guys that's Pro Bowlers, one is an All Pro, and then you have another guy that's probably top 10 at his position. When you have an offensive line that's anchored by those three guys, you tend to skim out on the other two positions, which is clearly what Ballard did in this situation. And he paying for it, man, because the top three let you down in the beginning. They're starting to come around now. And the other two just wasn't good enough to sustain with the other three not playing as well as they're supposed to be playing. So it's
It's too late. Just say it. Say it. That's the moral of the story, right? It is too late.
it is, man. It's just over, man.
Like,
It is over.
how do you salvage it? The honest answer is you don't. Like, there's no salvaging the situation week 10, week 11, week 12. Teams that are able to fix or fill holes are teams in those ranges where there's guys that are free agents because of X, Y, and Z reason, things that were a little bit different. Odell Beckham, for example, still a free agent, not because he's not talented, had an injury, things that were affecting it more so, and he's gonna go sign with a contender. People are never gonna like that. You're just not gonna fill those holes now. Things that weren't done to this team, there were guys that were tackles that are succeeding elsewhere that were free agents for a very, very long time that the Colts did not sign.
And look at, not to cut your wisdom, just look at the difference between Howie Roseman and Chris Ballard. You know, Howie Roseman gets the ball ran down his throat literally last week in the Washington game. He just got it chipped away. Washington just chipped away 4 yards, 3 yards, 2 yards, fourth and one, first down, 3 yards, 2 yards, 2 yards, fourth and two. First down. Like they just chipped away and ran the ball down the Eagles' throat. What he does that following week. You know, he has the number one rushing back from last season coming into town. What I'm going to do? I'm going to go get Linval Joseph. I'm going to go get Ndamukong Suh. And we instantly saw the impact. That's the difference between what Howie Roseman is doing and what Chris Ballard would have done in that situation. Chris Ballard would have found two guys that played, on a Cowboys practice squad last season, that defensive tackle is going to come in and get waived and then get picked up and signed to the practice squad and waived again in 2 weeks to make room for another guy that he, you know, it's just levels, man. It's just levels. And the more I just look at things like that, the more flaws I see in the way Chris Ballard operates.
And to me, a lot of people like to like say, why weren't you in on the top dog free agents? Those ones, I really don't blame GMs for. Very
Right.
hard to land those top tier guys. So some would say, why weren't the Colts in on Terron Armstead? Because that's a lot of dang money, and you were already paying a lot of dang money elsewhere. Okay, I
That's
get
what it
it.
is.
You
Yeah.
can make those arguments. Now, the ones that I am gonna put blame on, Duane Brown, proven left tackle in this league, sat around on free agency well past tier three, signs with the Jets. You're telling me with all the hype this Colts team was getting that Duane Brown wouldn't come be the left tackle for Matt Ryan? Didn't get a lot of money, could have came right in, started day one. And Duane Brown, when he's been healthy for the Jets this year, has been a dang good left tackle.
Looking at that. Okay. Now that's one left tackle. That was just this past offseason, correct?
That was
Offseason.
this offseason.
Yeah, this past offseason. What about the offseason before that when you took Eric Fisher over Charles Leno, who's been playing pretty well?
You wanna go even more recent? You know who the Cowboys signed off the streets? That's been a pretty productive left tackle the last couple of weeks.
Go ahead.
Jason
Old
Peters.
man. Old man
Old man
Peters.
Jason Peters has walked in playing as a productive left tackle, and instead the Colts rolled out a guy who had no tackle experience outside of spot play and naturally was a guard and just threw him to the wolves. And now the fan base hates a guy who they liked last year. Matt Pryor was a fan favorite last
He
year,
was.
and people wanted to see him play. It may have been more so about the hate for Eric Fisher, but Matt Pryor had praise from the fan base, and he
And
moved him to
then
a new position and just chose that over all these other guys. Like those, like I, do I blame him for not going after Terron Armstead? I don't. I get it, but there's just X, Y, Z, so many other guys that you can mention of why this was just a malpractice situation and fireable. This is a fireable offense.
It absolutely is though. Like, and then you're gonna sit there in the interview in the exit interview at the end of the season. You're gonna tell me, well, we're always looking to
You guys told me
make
to
the
draft
team
a
better,
receiver. You guys
right?
told me. You guys made me.
To
Alec
say
Pierce is
that,
me.
oh my God, I was so effing furious in
We don't
that.
got to go down the press conference because we could get fired up all over again. I remember recording that episode moments after the press conference. I don't want to relive that. I don't want to talk about
It
the
was
upper
awful,
quartile
bro.
of the top quartile right now. I'm not in that mindset. But to answer the question is how do you salvage it the rest of the way? I think you have to build this offense around ways to hide those flaws, hide those holes. But the problem is you're gonna face guys that are gonna exploit it. Your next two games are going to essentially be against TJ Watt and then Micah Parsons.
With a matchup with Khalil Mack coming down the line too, as well.
And then you have the Vikings with Za'Darius Smith,
Za'Darius Smith, Everson Griffin, right?
Everson Griffin. Like there it's not going to get easier. Like this next approach is going to be a tough room, and this
Hell,
offensive
y'all,
line is just going to have to figure it out. And the
you can't
long
even
story
block
short is they're
Jerry
not.
Hughes. You can't even block Jerry Hughes.
Who you play the last week and is bound to have at least one sack. I don't know what the line is for that, but if Vegas is smart and knows the history, they should have that line at 1.5.
And you have my draft crush from 2 years ago, Azeez Ajulari, coming in along with Kayvon Thibodeaux with the Giants on New Year's
Who
Day.
should be
But
healthy by then?
yeah,
Who
absolutely.
and when he's been healthy this year, he's looked pretty dominant. He's had some injuries, so he's not going to be in that Defensive Rookie of the Year talk and all that stuff. So people might forget about it, but when he's been healthy, he's looked good too. So,
Hey, man.
Matt, I'm sorry we got so fiery. I should have just answered, I don't think you can, instead of just going on that. And this ended up being a very anti-Chris Ballard topic,
I didn't
but.
think we was about to go in on battle
I
that way,
didn't.
but
I didn't know it was going to be like that. I mean, maybe it was. I blame Joel's tweet. Joel Erickson, man, you got us going.
I would say, this has been a bad ending to this episode. You know, I hate to end the episode like this, but
Or
what I'm
great,
gonna
depending on who you
What
are.
right. Well, what I'm going to say is we could be the Denver Broncos and have just given a guy $230 million who may Never be good again.
Maybe that's how we need it in this episode. We could be this team. There's a lot of teams that are disappointing this
I was
year.
about to say, I got another one. We could
Be
be the Jets.
I'll say one that you won't say for obvious reasons, but we could be the Los
Don't do
Angeles
it.
Rams. We could be the Los Angeles Rams who just won a Super Bowl. Sky was the limit, and you may be a top 10 pick without a draft pick.
We could be the Saints, who moved up to get Chris Olave, who's going to be rookie of the year, and also draft Trevor Penning, who has been absolutely a non-factor this whole season and is currently handing away a top five pick to the Philadelphia Eagles.
With no
Damn
quarterback
it.
on the roster for the future.
Damn it, man.
We could be the Green Bay Packers, who have a back-to-back MVP on the roster. Again, traded away your receiver one, spoke the entire offseason about why this team is still it, and could finish third in your own division.
That's disgusting. We could be the Las Vegas Raiders, a team that traded a lot of assets for a 30-year-old wide receiver and made him the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL and signed Josh McDaniels to a pretty fat contract.
And apparently can't fire him.
And he's infireable. You gave Derek Carr an extension, which I would say is smart, though, because you can get off that extension at the end of this season. So you're not tied to him. And at least you were smart enough to keep your first round pick this season. So you should have a top five pick. So I guess you're not that bad, but you have the worst defense. They actually have the worst defense in the NFL.
And then we'll finish off. So we could be with a division team. We could be the Jacksonville Jaguars, who drafted who many said was the unbustable draft pick at number one, who's looking pretty bustable right about now.
It's really combustible. But nah, man, thank y'all for tuning in. We appreciate it. We will see y'all again later on this week. Don't forget to send us some questions. We'll have the post up, I'm sure, on Wednesday morning for y'all to submit some questions to us so we can answer them on the show that night. We'll see y'all then. Peace.